So I hope you'll forgive me again for speaking into the silence. I was feeling very potently just now sitting here. How much whatever is expressed in this hall is made up of all of us. Not just of all of us sitting here, but also all of us everywhere. And it was equally very strong just before walking here and just sitting outside my room and looking out. Just really feeling that sense of being one of many, you can say. And I'd like to begin this afternoon's exploration with one of the questions that was asked at the end of Gemma's talk yesterday. And so the question was, about this sense of standing in the unknown, standing on the, what we can call the groundless ground, or standing on nothing, if we prefer that. And then also speaking about this love or this trust that there's something there. And about the possibility that we're holding on to the love or the trust as something that's comforting our discomfort, or creating ground for us to stand on, is another way of saying it. And I want to go back to that question because it feels like a really, really kind of juicy exploration. And I felt there were a few things in there that are worth kind of spreading out, bringing out, so that we all look at them. And one point is about when we feel this discomfort of being in the unknown, of being in uncharted territory, we can say, something we don't know or we can't grasp. As Gemma was saying yesterday, our natural tendency is to create a ground, to fill that sense of nothingness with something. And what we fill it up with becomes more and more subtle the more time we spend in this place. So even an actual experience of, I'm throwing us in at the deep end, by the way, in case you haven't noticed yet. Even an experience of feeling for ourselves this trust or this love can then, with time, move from being an actual experience to an idea that we have that we then put in there to fill the gap, to fill up the space, so that we're not uncomfortable anymore. And the other thing that was coming very strongly was how important it is to experience this for ourselves. How impossible it is to have this confidence of being with no confidence, this ability to be in the unknown. It's not something we can receive, we can get from anyone or anything else. Something we have to actually taste ourselves. So we can receive guidance, we can receive inspiration. But we can't actually receive the experience of doing it. Does that make sense? Not really. Thanks, Ernst. It's good to have someone honest. Okay, well, hopefully it will become more clear. So, I'll backtrack. We were speaking about times in our lives when the ground, when the carpet, that was the image that was being used, the carpet is being pulled out from under our feet. And we cannot grasp at anything to give us solidity. There's no solidity. And yet we try in every possible way to gain that solidity. We want the solid again. So the carpet is pulled out. We find ourselves standing on nothing, or at least on nothing familiar. And our natural habitual response is to try and either run away from that experience, or if we can't, to make sense of it somehow, in some habitual way. Does that make sense so far? Yeah? Okay. And yet, we need to find a way to stay there. To stay there. To stay in that, can say, discomfort or shakiness or earthquake kind of situation without running away and without creating a false floor, we can say, in our habitual way. And that, this ability to stay there in the shakiness, is something we have to find ourselves. It's not something that someone else can give us. Lenny?
I think we just do it, don't we? When the carpet goes out, like was happened on the first retreat.
Yeah.
Just attempts to grab at things, but everybody knew that there wasn't anything to grab.
Yeah. So sometimes it just happens, and at other times we—at least I—I'll speak for myself—can see very clearly the attempt to run away. So solve, get solutions. Get closure, whatever it is, move on. Or to fill up the gap with something tangible. So ideas or opinions or views, which can, as I was saying before, can get very, very subtle. you know, we can use, or as Gemma was saying yesterday, you know, even the idea of, you know, everything passes, or this is life, as a cover-up, as a way of not being in direct contact with our experience. And it's funny because the next point I had written down is about the limited nature of language to talk about this, which I think I'm experiencing right now. How much when we put things into words, when I put things into words, they naturally have a limited quality. They can't describe the vastness. They can hint, but not be as precise as when we actually feel something and experience it. And I feel that's something really worthwhile keeping in the background as we listen, as I speak for myself as well. Just to remember that the words are limited, but there's actually something behind the words which is being expressed. So the words will naturally fall into duality, into absolutes, into things that aren't actually real, aren't the actual felt, sensed experience, but close as possible. And with that, how important it is to keep the questioning going as we move. Somehow, what's been coming to me a lot recently is how we don't have a finishing line on this path. And this questioning, this inquiry, is so important all the time. So even when I feel like I've found something to rest on, just to keep that willingness to look alive, not in a aggressive way, but just to keep that willingness to look and the openness that things may keep on unfolding and change. And what seems clear or dependable right now may change. What I found to be useful right now, I might need to put it down at some point. And it may become useful again at a later point. And teachings, at the same time as being open and questioning to our process, also being open to teachings coming from wherever. Not always where we expect them to come from. And I'm saying that because one of my personal inspirations is Roger Federer, and I'm just about to quote him. So, people who don't know, he's a tennis player. And I, when I was thinking about this, no finishing line, no end point to this process, I was remembering something he said. So he's considered by many to be the greatest tennis player of all time. His nickname is GOAT, which is an acronym for greatest of all time. And often when he's interviewed and asked, what do you think has made you such a good tennis player? What do you think has made you such a great tennis player? And he says, this is one of his answers, is when I started playing, I had a great serve and a great forehand. So these are two important aspects of being a good tennis player. But my backhand, which is another stroke, wasn't so good. So when people came to play me, they would hit the ball to my backhand. They would hit the ball to my weak point. And so I had to learn to have a good backhand too. And so my opponents are what made me a great tennis player. And then from that, I learned that there's never an end. I always have to keep improving my game. I always have to look at what is happening in the game, what my opponents are doing, and train. So I may be the only Roger Federer fan in the room. But I think it's a great, great insight into life and into our practice. Actually, into whatever we do. For several reasons. One is this change of angle. Instead of looking at my weakness as my problem, actually looking at it, at what is difficult for me or what I'm not good at, or what is challenging, looking at that as an opening, as an invitation, as a place to grow. I think that's great. And the other is what I was saying before, this sense of there's not an end. If you love something, you just keep getting better at it. You don't stop. Doesn't matter how many tennis trophies you've won, and if your nickname is the GOAT, you still carry on because you love it. And that's the third thing, is there's not much sense of ego there when he speaks. But that may be my projection. There's not that much sense of ego. There's a sense of love of the game, love of the process. So I'd like to come back to us. And I'd like to come back to these moments of being in the unknown. Or experiencing the unknown. Or experiencing this gap that happens sometimes. The Tibetan teacher Chogyam Trungpa based a lot of his teachings on this sense of the unknown and on these gaps. And he spoke about the fact that these moments are available to us all the time. It's not just when something really big happens. not just when something really big happens. He spoke about really noticing when something happens and there's a gap between the happening and our response. There's a moment of non-happening, of non-doing, between the event and our reaction or our response to the event. And he gave examples, luckily. For example, he said, if we really pay attention to our breath, we notice that at the end of the out-breath, there's usually a gap. There's a moment when the out-breath is finished and the in-breath hasn't started yet. And when we pay, I don't know if you've done it, it's really worth doing this. Because when you pay attention, you really see the whole scenario happening. The out-breath ends, and usually we're not paying attention, so we don't notice this gap, and we just naturally go into the in-breath again, and it just keeps going. But when we pay attention, we notice the out-breath stopped, there's no in-breath, there's a moment of nothing, and often there's panic. That's one reaction. And the other is that even without wanting to do it, we create the in-breath. So this is exactly what we were talking about yesterday in a very, very kind of micro example. We get scared or we don't know what's happening, and so we create the event. We create the happening because we don't know how to deal with no happening, no event. Blank. So another more examples of this is when we received some kind of shock, and it could be very, very simple. Do you remember the last time you stubbed your toe or hit your head? Some physical pain, and the event happens, and if you pay attention, there's a gap before there's a reaction. There's a moment of stillness, of nothing. There's a moment of nothing. And also in moments when we feel wonder, when we just see something or experience something which just is like, floors us. There's the experience, and there's a gap when nothing's happening before we get in there and start getting excited or describing it or thinking how we're going to tell about it to somebody else or how we're going to make that happen again, whatever it is. So what Chogyam Trungpa was advising us is, first of all, to notice these situations happening. Because they're small situations, we can notice them. And then to cultivate the ability to stay in the gap, to see what we can do to stay in that moment of stillness before something else takes over. And I just think it's a great teaching. So I wanted to share it today. It feels very, very applicable. Doesn't mean that it's easy. It's not easy. But we can find it. We can find it. And then he said that even when we've stayed in that moment of stillness, and then we see our habits starting, whatever it is. We see ourselves creating the in-breath, or we see our mind starting to talk, or we feel, oh God, you know, I'm going to die because I just stubbed my toe. Whatever it is, we see the life kicking in. We can still stay present with that. We can still have that same attitude of gentle interest in what is happening. So, unlike tennis, we can never lose. Because what's ever happening, we can be present with. And this, in time, the more we do this, the easier it becomes to notice these moments, and the more we can actually stay in them. The more we can actually stay in them. It's the beautiful thing about practice. And sometimes it works, occasionally. And Chogyam Trungpa called this experience of, I call it the pre-habit stillness. He called it the direct sky experience. Because the image he used was that our true nature, all of us, is of a vast sky. And that in these moments we have access. We actually experience this direct, vast sky that's underneath all the time. And he also suggested as a practice, and you can do this or not whenever you're inspired, to actually invite or create these moments. So he would encourage his students to stop what they were doing every once in a while and just look up at the sky. To stop what they were doing every once in a while and just look up at the sky. Just look up at the sky. Or stop what they were doing and notice the gap at the end of the out-breath. Just as an invitation. And of course we can find our own ways of doing the same thing. I have a friend who spends a lot of time working on his laptop, and he has a timer that sets off a bell at random intervals. So every once in a while there's a bell. And then that's a moment just to connect and to feel this pre-habit stillness inside. And so we're building up what Chogyam Trungpa called positive confidence. The confidence that we can do this, that we actually do have the capacity to be in this groundless ground, pre-habit stillness, vast sky place. Even if it's just for one moment at a time, or even like a fraction of a moment. But it actually happens to us. And that slowly builds, that slowly grows. And so when we experience these moments, our relationship to them slowly, gradually changes. And instead of trying to run away or find a way out of this uncomfortable situation, whether it's just the gap at the end of the out-breath, I keep coming back to that because it sounds so ridiculous when I say that. Why should we panic? Because there's a gap at the end of the out-breath, but at least for me, when I do it, there is. So whether it's something as minor, as small as that, or the big things, we have the capacity to be there. And we have the capacity to grow the capacity. Not to look for an easy way out, but to actually see it as a way in, as a way of deepening, as a way of connecting. And I just want to give a few more examples of this, hopefully to give a taste. And the first one is an experience of, or the fruits of this, we could say, from my life, from one of the difficult relationships I've had in the past few years, an ongoing difficult relationship. And having the experience of an interaction and the other person saying things that I was hurt by, and feeling the pain, fully feeling the pain, and yet a knowing with the staying in that gap, so staying with the pain, staying with the discomfort, knowing that whatever response that's available to me from this place of pain is going to repeat the same pattern we've been in for years now. It will just create a repetition. So staying in that place of pain, and yet a response needed. Someone just said something, so a response needed. Staying in that place of pain and then becoming aware that underneath there's another place, which is a place of more possibilities. And from that place, a response can come that is actually useful, that isn't a repetition of the old dynamic, but opens up the interaction to a completely different outcome. Does that make sense? And what's really important there is that, again, one of our ways of responding or of escaping is to suppress. Okay, so I can suppress the pain and hold myself and have a response which comes from an idea. But this isn't about suppressing. This is about staying in that discomfort, feeling that discomfort, and feeling something else at the same time. And somehow having the choice, which is a miracle. Having the choice where to respond from. So instead of running away, instead of suppressing, actually letting ourselves go deeper, sink deeper into whatever is deeper down. And in this way, the discomfort or the sense of pain or the sense of something I don't want, which we usually see as our opponent, actually becomes a helpful quality in our lives. Because the discomfort has such a strong energy that it's very easy to notice. And when we can connect to that energy, it helps us go deep. Instead of going out, go in. Go deep. It's almost like, sometimes it feels like it's almost like a vehicle. It's something that actually pulls us in when we connect to it directly. When we don't push away, when we don't run away, when we stay. So that's the everyday. The everyday magic transformation possibility. And I'd like to give another example, which is going to take a bit longer. And this is actually from a letter that I received a few days ago. And it's a letter from a friend who's been living with cancer for quite a few years now. And so I just want to share some of what she's shared. Of her experience of opening to discomfort, to pain, to fear, to the things that close us down. And it's translated from Hebrew to English by me. So I apologize to her and to you that I'm probably not 100% accurate in her voice, but hopefully enough will be there. So she says, in the last years, I've experienced great amounts of fear, seemingly around coping with cancer. But in reality, there is no actual connection between the fear and the illness. But in reality, there is no actual connection between the fear and the illness. And she explains, there were times when I had a tiny lump in my armpit, and the fear was paralyzing and unbearable. And yet recently, when tests showed a marked increase in the cancerous cells in my body, I experienced almost no fear at all. I feel that the fear isn't linked to the disease. The cancer has simply exposed the way fear was in control of my life. Until this illness, I was unaware of the impact fear had. So she's pointing out to us that even something that seems just so clear, I have cancer, I'm afraid, is a direct relationship. And yet through self-inquiry, through being with a process, looking at her fear, she's noticed there's no direct relationship between what's happening in my body and the degree of fear that I feel. There's no direct relationship. So the cancer is worse, but the fear is less. And so what she's seeing in herself is that the fear was always there. And this contact with the illness, with the disease, has allowed her, through making contact with the fear, looking at the fear, seeing the fear, to actually see the impact of fear on her life. And so in her practice, she sat with fear day after day. And it's a very long letter, so I've got all 5 pages, but I'm not going to read them all. And she writes about this experience, about really making being with the fear her practice. at a certain point, I began feeling that I am burning up the fear, that I'm experiencing it in a way that releases and frees up life energy. The waves of fear crashing against my awareness became smaller and less threatening. Sometimes they transformed into something else. Often they transformed into something else. Usually the fear became sadness or pain. I feel that often fear covers up pain and sadness that we prefer not to feel. These are not our personal pain and sadness, but the pain and sadness of all beings, of all things. So going into her fear, looking at her fear, and with that presence, that ability that I was talking about before, that Chogyam Trungpa was talking about, of staying in the discomfort, of staying with this sense of not knowing, the fear starts to be burnt up and to release life energy. These are her words. And then she sees that the fear doesn't exist on its own. Underneath the fear is pain and sadness. And those pain and sadness are not just hers. Not just hers. The pain and sadness of all beings, of all things. The sadness inherent in our impermanence and the fact that each seed must be destroyed in order to become a flower. The sadness of being part of this cycle of life. That everything dies, that everything passes, that nothing is permanent and fixed. And she calls this journey that she's on the journey from mortal fear to alive, vital joy. It works more beautifully in Hebrew, so I'm going to say it for Shachar. Mipachad mavet lesimchat chayim. Mipachad mavet lesimchat chayim. And these are two kind of colloquial phrases in Hebrew. Perhaps the greatest lesson I have received on this journey from mortal fear to alive, vital joy is that when I allowed myself to be afraid, when I surrendered to fear, something held me. We are afraid to surrender and to let go because we think we are surrendering into nothingness. But there is no nothingness. We surrender into isness. Into the embrace of another, into love's grace, into the generosity of our community, into fullness. Only when I fully let go can I feel that which holds me. Only when I fully relax and surrender can I feel the earth beneath me. As long as I am holding myself, my muscles tight, I cannot feel the power of the earth supporting me. When we relax with what is, whatever it is, we open ourselves up to life's abundance. And we are nourished beyond our widest imaginations. And that abundance is naturally shared. This letter is a talk, a public talk that she gave a week ago exactly. It wasn't a private letter, that's why I shared it. And even though her body is dying, her energy seems incredible. And she's spending her time sharing that sense of abundance that she has discovered through the pain, through the fear, through the illness, and through her death, which is around the corner. And at the end of this letter, she says that she wants to give us a gift, all of us. And she has a long list, and I'm just going to read the last one. A list of gifts. And she says, I want to give you the joy that's inherent in life as it is, in every moment, in every day. As I am, hanging between sky and earth, without trying to determine if I'm here or there, without trying to be somebody, without trying to define who I am. So we don't need to wait until death knocks. In fact, it's knocking all the time. It's often said that it's the one certainty in life. Death will happen to each of us. Whatever is in our experience right now is a training ground, is an invitation to develop our capacity to be with what is as it is, to cultivate our ability to stand on no ground, to stand on no ground. Hardness and softness, tightness and vastness, joy and sadness are all part of one whole, as are we. So I'd like to end with a short poem by Rick Fields. And he says, when we feel ourselves closed, when we feel ourselves hard, behind the hardness there is fear. And if you touch the heart of the fear, you find sadness. And if you touch the sadness, you find the vast blue sky. And if you touch the sadness, you find the vast blue sky. So let's have a few quiet moments together. rest in moments of stillness. And touch the vast blue sky. May our honesty, courage, and gentleness lead us to stand on groundless ground for the benefit of all beings everywhere.